Alaska has enjoyed a reputation as a state with good opportunities for employment and good wages to go along with it. I'm Lori Townsend. Commercial fishing and the resource extraction industry have been steadfast Alaskan employers, featuring jobs known for hard work that paid well. But both sectors are in decline, and with low oil prices for the foreseeable future, what will the labor market look like in the next decade? We're talking about the future of wages today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. Celebrate National Philanthropy Day in Alaska and honor outstanding small businesses like Two Friends Gallery for their work to make Alaska a better place to live and raise Alaskan families. Join the celebration on Friday, November 20th at the Denina Center. Visit afpalaska.net. This message sponsored by Alaska Public Media and AFP Alaska. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello. Thanks for joining us today for Talk of Alaska. Lots of Americans and other citizens of the world have heard the stories that if you're willing to work hard in often extreme conditions, you could make a good, financially successful life for yourself in Alaska. Thousands have heeded that call and did indeed find great jobs here for many decades. Will this story be different for future generations who want to find a high-paying job in a state that isn't cheap to live in? What's on the horizon for the state's wage economy? There's always been a robust number of people arriving and leaving Alaska on an annual basis, but will more be leaving now? Here to answer some of these questions for us is Alaska Labor and Workforce Development Department Commissioner Heidi Dragas. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And also State Economist Neil Fried.
Good morning, Lori.
Good morning. Thanks for being here. I should also mention, in the interest of full disclosure, that Neil is a board member for Alaska Public Media, but he's been an economist much longer than that. So we're here to talk about the future of what the job scene will look like in Alaska. And if you'd like to join us, our number statewide is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling in the Anchorage area, it is, the local number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Heidi, I want to start with you. First, you've been on the job for about a year. How's it been?
Well, besides this Alaska death plague cold that I contracted, I want to assure my mother I have not taken up smoking, so I apologize. I've got some tea. Thanks for the tea. You know, I didn't know what to expect when I first entered the Department of Labor building back at the end of December of last year. And, you know, at first it's a little bit overwhelming. There's all these different divisions and individuals that you're meeting and deadlines, and immediately you are faced with budget cuts and evaluating your budgets. And it's a lot of information to take in. A lot of people say it's like drinking from a fire hose. But I think the most surprising thing to me is how much I really enjoy it. The staff at the Department of Labor are phenomenal. In every department, the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation has some just salt of the earth people that really love what they do, and they're committed to the employment of individuals with disability. The research and analysis section of our department is kind of our shining star. We get a lot of incredible compliments for the work that our economists, including our pseudo-celebrity Neil Fried and others, in the work that they do to inform the public about Alaska's economy, including this particularly important topic about workers and wages. But I think there's a lot of longevity in the department. I think people are passionate about making sure that workers are safe, making sure that when workers are unemployed, that they get benefits to help them sustain themselves and their families. And we are right now passionately committed to workforce development and training workers for the next generation of work, which we hope that includes an Alaska natural gas line.
Well, I want to ask about your write-up in the latest Alaska Economic Trends publication. I'm going to hold this up, so if you're watching rather than listening in the future, you can see what we're looking at. And it's also on our website, alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Economic Trends from October of 2015. Heidi, in the latest trends publication, you make note of the split in wealth in the country and then compare that 1% to 99% wealth gap to how it is in Alaska. Tell us about that comparison and how it's changing in Alaska now.
Well, I think it's something that we should all be concerned about, not just as Alaskans, but as Americans, that the top 1% wage earners have so much of the nation's wealth, and the disparity between those who have and those who have not is nearly the greatest in this nation's history. And that concerns me. One important thing to note is in Alaska, that disparity is not as stark as the rest of the United States. And I think that's a good thing. I think there's some interesting dynamics that happen in Alaska. While we are one of the lower states as far as educational attainment for our citizenry, we still have some of the highest median wages in the country. And I think one of the reasons for that is our robust oil and gas workforce, our construction workforce. They're still very strong. And so you can, on a high school diploma, still earn really good wages here in Alaska. And that is not as much the case in the lower 48, where I think the service sector really dominates. I think that's one thing that we will see in the future in Alaska, is that I do think that, and Neil probably can better predict this than I can, but I do think that we will see at least sustained moderate growth in construction and in the oil and gas industry for various reasons. One being that, you know, when oil and gas, or oil particularly, is more difficult to extract, it actually takes more resources to get that oil out of the ground. And there are still some significant deposits of oil up on the North Slope. And in fact, ConocoPhillips had their work in the NPRA and CD5. I mean, they found they think they're going to be able to produce 15,000 barrels of oil a day in that CD5 alone. So, but it takes more resources to do that, which coincidentally is actually good for Alaska's economy. It requires more manpower to get that oil out of the ground than it used to. So that is good for our economy. So I don't think we'll see the dip in oil and gas and in construction that we fear. But one of our big concerns is the service sector is growing. We see that. We see that in, if you look at this October's Trends magazine, that is something that should concern Alaskans, because the service sector is the lower wage sector of our economy. And that should be something that we have to take a particular look at. And we are at the department. One of the things that we know through our research and analysis section is that 47 of the 50 fastest growing jobs in Alaska are in the healthcare sector, and that is a service sector. And so one thing that we need to do in order to maintain robust wages in Alaska is to ensure that we get proper training and a skilled workforce in the healthcare sector, and that's something that we are committed to at the department through our pre-apprenticeship and registered apprenticeship initiative.
And I want to talk a little bit more about some of those programs in a bit, but Neil, I want to get you in here. Give us kind of an overview, and then we'll drill down into some individual areas, but give us an overview of the labor economy against the increasingly dismal fiscal situation.
Well, you know, right now, we look at the fiscal situation, we look at the budget gap, and we talk about it a lot. When we look at our actual numbers, our employment numbers, our income numbers, our gross state product numbers, there's nothing evident yet, for most part, in those numbers. I mean, employment is still growing. This year, oil industry is going to end up at maybe a record or at the same level as it was last year. One thing that's beginning to manifest itself when we look at state employment, state government employment, it has turned and it is now negative. There are fewer people working for the state government today than there were a year ago. So that's a slight manifestation. Those losses are relatively small right now, but they are there. So when we actually look at the numbers, it's really, hard to find something that's tied to this fiscal picture. Not to say that that's not going to happen. I mean, we certainly think there's a much more likelihood of that beginning to manifest itself and being able to see it in the numbers next year.
Mm. If you'd like to join our conversation, has your job changed or are you looking for a new job? What sort of changes are you seeing in your field? 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255 or in the Anchorage area, 550-8422. You can also email us talk@alaskapublic.org. We have seen some adjustments. ConocoPhillips, there was a report in October that they have laid off some workers, didn't get any numbers really. And there was a small round of that in March. What do we know about how, as you mentioned, Heidi, it takes more workers to develop harder to get at oil, but if the prices are low, are they going to be doing that? So what are we seeing about for adjustments in the oil industry right now, Neil?
I mean, I think we're beginning to, we've heard about small layoffs that have taken place both in Cook Inlet and on the North Slope. We have actual numbers through the second quarter of 2015. They remain relatively strong. I think as the year goes on and as those numbers come out, they are going to show some weakness as the year goes on. My guess is 2016, those numbers will come down. It's happened in every state in the country that is producing oil. Ours have been the most moderate thus far. We are sort of project-based. We're not sort of, so our numbers are, there's a less volatility. Some of it may be just simply that it's going to take longer here to feel those. But there is a feeling out there. There's no doubt about it. I mean, low price is really, really important. There is no doubt about it.
Well, and I've heard folks talking about, anecdotally, I don't know what they're basing it on, but talking about people are leaving these jobs here in the oil patch for North Dakota and other places. And I'm seeing you shake your head no. Is that not what we're really seeing here?
Well, I don't think people are leaving here to go to North Dakota because North Dakota is losing more. Their jobs are actually their jobs in their oil sector are being lost more quickly than ours. So I don't think that's happening.
That...
We did hear that in the past. Mm-hmm. I don't know if, actually what's amazing is oil industry employment has doubled in the last decade in Alaska. It represents almost a quarter of the new jobs that were generated in Alaska came from oil, which is phenomenal. I mean, I don't know if that's ever really happened. And I'm talking about the very narrow definition of the oil industry, the Doyons, the ConocoPhillips, the BPs, the SRCs and those. So, it's actually a pretty amazing story. Like the commissioner said, it takes a lot more workers to pull that actually less oil out of the ground today because the fields are smaller, they're less efficient, and to a certain extent, that's manifested by the fact that it takes more workers to pull that oil out of the ground along with capital.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also important to note that conventional oil development in Alaska continues to be profitable for oil companies despite dropping oil prices. So the oil companies are not going to go anywhere. And like Neil said, we've seen a significant increase in our oil workforce, our oil development workforce on the slope. So a modest decline, it doesn't seem to will not likely impact the Alaska economy too much. You know, that's what we're seeing at this point. But I don't see any evidence that the oil companies that are developing and working on the North Slope are going to go anywhere anytime soon.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are discussing the future of the Alaska wage economy, what jobs will look like going forward. And we're going to turn to the phones just for a moment. And if you'd like to join us, the number is 1-800-478-8255 statewide, 1-800-478-8255, or in the Anchorage area, 550-8422. And Stu joins us from Muldoon.
Hey, Hi, Stu. Thanks for taking my call. I love your station talking about the August 31st Marketplace, which is a show which is on your station, I think, twice a day. You guys might want to take a listen to that. They're talking about Alaska losing two-thirds of our population with the decline of the oil industry.
Wow.
And also, you also might note what the reports were about Iran coming on the market with their very large oil amounts at very low cost production. $20 a barrel is what they were saying is going to happen. So just want to see what, at $20 a barrel and what the marketplace is saying, what your speakers think is going to happen up here.
Okay, thanks, Stu. Here's an opportunity to dispel the myth that we're going to lose two-thirds of our population because of declines in oil prices.
Well, Neil's the economist, but I, you know, we can't predict what's going to happen in, let's say, 100 years. But there are no indicators that we are losing two-thirds of our population anytime soon. So,
well, and maybe some of that concern is centered around the fact that for the first time in at least two decades, I believe, if not longer, we did see a net decrease in the, it's an amazing number to me that between, what is it, 30 and 50,000 people each year in and out of Alaska. I don't know how that compares to other states, but that's always been a stunning figure for me. But in the last couple of years, that's changed, Neil.
It has. I mean, we gain 40, or like you said, Laurie, about 40 to 50,000 move in and out of the state. We're a very footloose state, you know, one of the most footloose states in the country. Normally, and last year for the first time in 2014, actually a few more people moved out than moved in. And we actually had an absolute net loss in our population. I think it was 61.
Hardly two-thirds.
And this is the first time we lost population since 1988. But I have to say that happened. Those numbers came about before the price of oil actually had begun to decline. So there was no relationship between that and the price of oil. Now, there is a relationship between our economy and the national economy. And the national economy's recovered very, very strongly. And whenever that happens, what happens is when the Great Recession occurred, our migration went up, more people came to Alaska, more people stayed. And as the American economy began to recover, fewer people came to Alaska because there were more opportunities closer to home, and some more Alaskans did leave during that period of time. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a repeat of that in 2015. It's hard to get. I mean, losing two-thirds of the population, that's not going to happen. Will we lose population? That certainly is a possibility. But we've never lost that. I mean, that's not going to happen.
Yes, I would agree that we're probably not seeing that type of a huge decline in our population anytime soon. Let's talk about wages over the last 25 years. What have been the big shifts, Commissioner Dragas, in what we've seen in the last couple of decades?
Well, one of the things that concerns me about where wages have gone over 25 years is that they're are a higher share of workers making lower wages. And that is, you know, this difference we talk about between, you know, the 99% and the 1%. So I think that's something that we should look at. How can we reverse that trend? It shows a decline in the earning power of the middle class. And I think that that certainly concerns me. You know, another thing that is interesting to note is that the median wage in Alaska actually went down over the last 25 years. And I think we need to take a hard look at why that's happening. I suspect that part of that reason is because the service sector jobs have increased, and they are lower wage jobs. So if we can't reverse that trend, if we're going to have sustained growth in the service sector, then we need to do something about the wages in those service sector jobs so that the lowest wage earners don't take the hit in this supposed new economy. So something that is particularly concerning to me is that more of those low wage earners are women, a disproportionate amount, women and minorities. So I think, you know, there are certain policies and decisions that we can make to address those issues. But I think what we need to do right now is really look at why that's happening and what is the answer to that? How can we solve that and reverse that trend? Because, you know, if you look back in history, our best economies really happened when we have a strong middle class, and that's proven over time. And when the middle class starts to shrink, all of Alaskans should be concerned.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones just for a moment here, and then I want to get to the other end of that spectrum with women and wages. Terry is in Valdez. Hi, Terry.
Greetings. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Our state constitution dictates that when we develop the state's resources, it's for the benefit of all in Alaska. And I think SB 21 was a real kick in the teeth to that. And the other thing that was brought up during the Pebble Mine discussions was that we get no royalty from hard rock minerals in general. The only thing we get is from fossil fuels. And with SB 21 right now, with all the kickbacks, from what I understand, it's revenue neutral. This just shouldn't be. I think the state lawmakers really need to readjust how they give away the state's resources. I remember a lot of the timber sales in the state lands lost money. It cost more to survey them and put the roads in than they got from the timber sales. I think this whole program of revenue neutral extraction needs to stop. And anyway, I'll get off the phone and hear your response. Thanks.
Okay, I'm not really sure how that relates to wages, but does anyone want to comment on on Terry's thoughts? If not, we're going to move on and take one more call. This is Jessica in Homer. Hi, Jessica. Do you have a question for our guests?
How are you today? Thank you for putting on such a relevant show. My work in Homer is making yurts. We have been doing this for 20 years in Alaska. For the last 10 years, we've hired about 8 to 10 people and kept them kind of half alive through the winter, but because we have no support in the state at all, zip, nothing, for value-added manufacturing. So I would like this table to take just a minute and close your eyes and imagine a world without extraction and where production is what we do as people. You know, we are fully capable. I came here from Denmark, okay, in the little town that I lived in Denmark 30 years ago. There was a glass factory, a suitcase factory, a cookie factory. They had farms that were producing, there was a leatherwork factory, and then there was all the musicians and the artists and all that stuff. Okay, it wasn't wild enough for me. I left. It was too tame. So I came here, but I took stuff with me from there, and what I took was that people can make a culture together that's healthy and vibrant, and they can do it without enslaving themselves to industries that kill the earth. and that kill their initiative and that don't give back, that extract most of the profit. You know, value-added manufacturing, I buy all my wood from here, because what you guys should be doing is subsidizing transportation in and out of Alaska. That's what you should be doing, is looking in that instead of subsidies to other companies that just extract and go away and poison.
Okay, so Jessica, you're talking about developing and supporting small businesses, which
I'm not. Value-added manufacturing. I could be a big business. Why aren't you talking about making vinyl? Why aren't you doing that? Now, vinyl is, you want to burn up that oil? That's the stupidest thing that I ever heard. Burning it up just wastes it and kills the earth. You could be doing a good factory and selling a product for 3 or 4 times as much, you know?
All right, so let's let our commissioner and our state economist here respond to some of your thoughts about this idea of value-added manufacturing. Commissioner Dragas?
You know, I think it's the caller makes a good point in that it is important in Alaska that we have a business climate that encourages entrepreneurs to engage in this in value-added manufacturing, as she said. We have a lot of Alaskan-grown businesses that have really flourished here and gone beyond our borders. The ones that come to mind right now, Alaskan Brewing Company, people, you know, drink their beers all over the world, and they should, because they're delicious. And, another one, new Alaska distillery that produces vodka out of potatoes that are grown in Alaska. I mean, I think that's pretty incredible.
They're making yurts in Homer.
And they're making yurts in Homer.
Right.
I think it's important that in Alaska we provide a business climate that promotes entrepreneurship. And I know it's something that the governor is committed to. One of the things that I know that he wants us to do more of in Alaska is our export our agriculture, our potatoes, our carrots. They're some of the best in the world, and there is already existing in particular in the Mattsu Valley, but in other areas of Alaska, a robust agricultural sector, and I think there's more to be done to really support those individuals and make it part of our Alaska economy. But we do have some of those. We do not have the manufacturing sector that a lot of states do in the lower 48.
Right.
We know that.
Right.
We're a unique state. We're an Arctic climate, and it's more expensive to do manufacturing here, to do business here, I think that they're, when I love hearing about yurt manufacturing in Homer, and we should do more to promote those types of businesses. I think that's an important part of the entire picture here in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like, we've heard the story for a long time. Well, it is expensive to have manufacturing here. We have a lack of a road system. We have it's more expensive to ship in raw materials. So does the thinking have to be more around how do we capitalize on the materials that are here and figure out how to support those businesses? Because it seems like it's always going to be expensive to bring in other materials from outside. So how is the state working to promote those kind of business efforts, or what's available for helping small businesses in that regard that are doing the unique work of taking products from Alaska and doing value-added work to them?
It's probably a good question for the Department of Commerce, but mm-hmm. I think it's something that the administration is certainly looking at. One of the things that the governor repeatedly says in our cabinet meetings is, buy Alaskan, grow Alaskan, buy local.
Right.
What can we do more, maybe first, in Alaska to promote Alaskan-owned businesses, Alaskan-owned products. Start there, and then from there, see what can we do to promote these types of products and these types of industries outside of Alaska. And you know, I mean, I say that, and Alaska itself is a draw for people. You know, what's one of the things that I find interesting, and maybe we can take a little comfort in from low oil prices, is the fact that when it's more affordable to come to Alaska and see our heritage, see our people, see our products, see our industry, because of low oil prices, we get an increase in tourism, and that also helps our economy too.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we will be talking more about the future of wages in Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
The University of Alaska Southeast, with schools of arts and sciences, management, education, and career education in Juneau, Ketchikan, and Sitka. UAS, a learning community on campus and online. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the future of wages in our state. And my guests today are Labor and Workforce Development Commissioner Heidi Dreiges and also State Economist Neil Fried. Both are in the studio with us today. So one of the things that you highlighted in the latest Alaska Economic Trends report is comparisons with current wages to the wages of 1989. Talk about why that year was kind of a high watermark. What was going on?
I'm not sure 1989 was really a high watermark. It actually wasn't. Probably 1975 or 77 was a high watermark when we were building a pipeline, or in the early 1980s were high watermarks. I think they were trying to... When Molly did this work, I think she was trying to look at 25 years. It just seemed like a good, you know, period of time to look at because, you know, a quarter of a century. And there were some interesting trends. I think if it was 20, the difference wouldn't have been that great. I mean, 1989 was the year of the oil spill, but that really did not distort wages that much. So I think it was really sort of doing the quarter of the century thing more than anything.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about which employment sectors are doing well and which aren't. Which, what are we seeing for a change from what people used to always hold to be the truth of Alaska, jobs in the oil industry, jobs in fishing, mining, timber? What's changing now?
Well, you know, sort of one of the strange things, actually, is that this last 10 years sort of does fit that sort of caricature of Alaska, you know, growth in the mining industry, growth in fishing, growth in oil. All those industries have grown, those resource extraction industries or resource industries. They're, believe it or not, they're more, you know, everyone thinks of the fishing industry as an industry that is mature and sort of is stable and flat, but that's not true at all. Employment in the fishing industry has grown a lot in the last decade in Alaska. I mean, there are more people in that industry now than maybe ever, or certainly in a very, very long time. And I've already talked about the oil industry. That's also the case, and the mining industry as well. When you look at the fastest growing industries, those are up there with healthcare, for example. You know, in absolute numbers, healthcare has generated more jobs than any other single industry in absolute numbers. Not 100%, but in absolute numbers, because it's a big industry, it's growing fast. But in absolute numbers, the oil industry has almost created as many in this last 10 years. Not the last 20, but the last 10. Because what happened is you saw a real nice recovery in the last 10, 12 years in those industries. It was in the 90s where a lot of those industries really struggled, and we saw that huge growth in retail and leisure and hospitality, and those industries where wages, you know, are relatively low. And we saw job losses in the oil industry. We saw fishing was struggling during that period of time as well. So, you know, the trends shifted in this last 10 or 12 years, and they actually improved over the previous decade in Alaska.
We had an email question from a listener who asks, how does Alaska's labor economy change if oil drops even farther than it is right now? What if it gets down to $20 a barrel, like we heard about Iran?
Well, we shouldn't hope for that, but I mean, it's certainly a possible. I mean, I get involved with helping forecast oil prices, and we all know, you know, that's a very difficult, if not impossible.
Of
you
course.
Know, who knows what's going to happen? But low oil prices is certainly not good for, you know, the oil industry and our economy in general. I mean, you know, the oil industry is responsible for almost a quarter of our gross state product, so it's really important. You know, and prices are certainly incredibly important. So it's the one thing I probably shouldn't do, but I watch it every day, and I celebrate when it goes up a little bit and get depressed when it goes down.
Of course,
some, right,
you watch
of course,
it every day.
So let me just say one other thing about the price of oil right now. It's basically the long-term average price of oil. It's not really low. I mean, it's lower than it was the previous 3 years, but the previous 3 or 4 years were extraordinarily high. These you might call more average, but I certainly wish it was still extraordinarily high.
Commissioner Dragas, did you want to get in there too?
Well, I'm with Neil. I don't think that let's all hope that the oil prices don't drop that far, but we know that, yeah, it's not unprecedented. Oil, I mean, there's the distinct possibility oil could drop that low. I don't think forecasters can predict it at this point, but I think it does. It's a stark reminder of how dependent our economy right now is on the price of oil. Mm. And it's extremely troubling to me that, you know, I think the number is 80 or 90% of our state economy, our budget, is dependent on the price of oil. To have your budget dependent upon a volatile commodity is as we're beginning to see, I don't want to say a recipe for disaster. Maybe that's maybe not the right phrase to use, but it's certainly concerning. We have a significant budget deficit right now. And given that we don't know what will happen with the price of oil, it looks as if it will remain stable in the $50 range. Of course, that could change at any time, but it highlights the fact that we, as a state, have an obligation to address this fiscal problem in Alaska. And I think that it's something that we simply cannot delay. Because we don't know what will happen with the price of oil. And if we do run out of savings and we don't have a way to make up for the significant budget shortfall that we have right now, that is over $2 billion, that will have a significant effect on this economy. And, you know, we're not in a situation right now, you know, it's only a crisis if we don't do anything. And so because of that, I'm glad that the listener sent in that email, because it is an important reminder that we don't know where the price of oil is going to go. We don't know that it will go up. It is a possibility that it will go down, and we are going to have to do something about that. And we can't wait. We can't wait much longer.
So I think part of the frustration that maybe Jessica was trying to get across, that when she called in from Homer about, you know, having a small business and employing local people, is that there's this frustration that I hear expressed about how we're so tied to the price of a barrel of oil and have been for so many decades. And we have not been able to really diversify the economy to any large degree in a way that can help stabilize things. How much time do you spend looking at that and working on what else can be done, and how can the state support development of other areas of potential employment growth that could help stabilize the economy here so that we're not so tied to that price of a barrel of oil?
Well, I think our economy is fairly diverse. We have a pretty strong healthcare sector. We have a strong service sector. Our tourism is strong. The seafood processing industry is quite strong, as Neil mentioned before. So I think our economy is much more diversified now than it was, say, in the 80s when the price of oil dropped last time. So our economy as a whole, I think, is in better shape to weather the storm than it was 30 years ago. But that said, the problem is that, you know, when, you know, I think my main concern is the state's, the state government's economy. And through that, you know, several different, you know, municipalities that rely on government money as well. And I think that is my biggest concern, is that if the state government, you know, has a situation where they have a significant budget shortfall, that will have a ripple effect. So I guess I'm more concerned about the dropping price of oil and sustained state government for the significant services that we provide than I am about, I am concerned about the ripple effect on the economy, but I am heartened by the fact that our economy is much more diverse than it used to be and is very strong.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, you had mentioned before the rise, we've talked a little bit, and there's a listener question here by email about the effects of the astronomical costs of health insurance and its effects on future entrepreneurship in Alaska. There's a pot of money that the state, I think it's about $3 million, close to $3 million, that the state has received from the American Apprenticeship Grant Program. What employment areas, I think that's related to the healthcare sector, but tell us about what that will help do. And then let's talk a little bit about the high rate of insurance costs in Alaska. It's an anomaly here compared to most other places. Let's talk a little bit about how that impacts job growth. But first, the apprenticeship program, Commissioner.
Well, that was a federal grant through the U.S. Department of Labor. It's a nationwide effort. Is something that President Obama and Secretary Tom Perez have been committed to, is increasing registered apprenticeship in the United States. And, you know, we have seen through our labor studies here at the department the positive effect that registered apprenticeship has on working people and on the economy. You know, the statistics are clear that registered apprenticeship lead to higher lifetime earning wages, lead to better career tracks, higher median wages. Registered apprenticeship is also a win-win for employers and employees, because as somebody and registered apprenticeship is basically on-the-job training coupled with instructional learning, whether in a classroom or online or in another forum, but you are learning while in a structured format while you are getting on-the-job training.
Sure.
And while you're going through that, you make lower wages. And so the employer gets a benefit because they pay this employee lower wages. Over time, as that employee gains skills in that particular occupation, they get increased pay and so on and so forth. And it really generates this career path for an individual. We see a lot of that in the construction sector, a lot of construction apprenticeships through joint apprenticeship training programs or training committees have set the gold standard for registered apprenticeship in Alaska here through a lot of labor management cooperatives. What we would like to do is replicate that model in other areas. And what this grant opportunity was a chance for any number of training programs, state departments, to apply and basically make a pitch on growing a registered apprenticeship in what I would call non-traditional areas. One of those is healthcare. There is registered apprenticeship in Alaska in healthcare at several different healthcare institutions here. What we would like to do, and what we did, and we successfully got this grant. It was very competitive. We were thrilled to get it. It's a $3 million grant, and we have decided to dedicate it towards a pre-apprenticeship and registered apprenticeship program in the healthcare industry. And it's one of those, you know, when we see that 47 of the 50 fastest growing jobs in Alaska are in healthcare, and we see increased job growth in the service sector, we know that we have to address the fact that the service sector is a lower wage industry. And when that is growing the fastest, we know that that's going to mean shrinking wages for the middle class. So the idea here is to try to capture those individuals, and we really do in this program try to go after underemployed, unemployed individuals, women, minorities, veterans, and introduce them to the healthcare industry through there's I believe 10 different programs that we're looking at. Behavioral health aids is something that we have a huge shortage in here in Alaska. And there are several other occupations. They are low-wage, entry-level jobs. And there's high turnover. One thing we know about registered apprenticeship is that it decreases turnover in these jobs. So we are particularly focused in the healthcare industry to try to give employees a career path in the healthcare industry through these entry-level jobs. And as they gain skill and training, they have built themselves into the idea is to build them into a structure where they can advance through their careers and really have a sustained, skilled workforce of healthcare workers in Alaska. It's something that we know we will need with Medicaid expansion, but also with our growing aging population here in Alaska.
Absolutely.
So we're very, very excited about that program, and we have a terrific support from the healthcare industry. South Central Foundation has been a big partner, Alaska Regional Hospital, several labor unions. It's a terrific program. We're really excited about it.
All right, we're going to return to the phones, and you can join us, 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255, or locally, 550-8422. Ellen is on the line from Anchorage.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I've enjoyed this program, specifically in the areas of your health and social services, and that as a growth industry. One of the downsides of that, however, is the internal systems within the Department of Health and Social Services in state government that are penalizing this particular growth. And I'm speaking primarily in the Medicare program. The accounting system and the repayment system within health and social services has become a like walking through molasses. And in the last 12 months, two very large durable medical equipment companies have been run out of business because the state cannot get their act together to pay for the services delivered by these two private companies.
All right. Well, thank you, Ellen, for that call. And we're going to get comment from our commissioner and our state labor economist. But first, we need to take a quick break. So we'll talk more about how entrepreneurs are or are not getting assistance from the state as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at CrowleyAlaska.com.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the future of wages. And we had a call from Ellen in Anchorage talking about how there's a problem with small companies, entrepreneurs, getting payment in a timely fashion so that they can't sustain their businesses. Any comment about that, Commissioner or Neil Fried?
I think one thing I would say, I mean, it's certainly not my area of expertise, but we know that that healthcare costs in Alaska are significant. They're out in left field. They are really an anomaly as far as rising costs of living go here in Alaska. It is something that I know that the Commissioner Davidson at the Department of Health and Social Services and the governor are committed to addressing. I hope with the input from the public that we can do that and do something about it.
All right. Did you want to add something, Neil?
Well, I think it's important. You know, this is a national problem, but it's even more exaggerated, more dramatic in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones just for a moment. Larry is in Anchorage. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Quick question from you.
Yes, I'm wondering what percentage of the Alaska budget, the state budget, goes to pay. And here's what I'm wondering. We're talking about cutting maybe $750 million from our operating budget because of the legislature and because of the times. And what is that going to do to jobs and to the wages? I think they're fairly state, jobs are fairly decent paying, but I'm concerned how much of that money has to come from jobs, people being employed by the state.
All right. Thank you, Larry, for that. Budget cuts, the state budget cuts impacting state jobs. And of course, that has a ripple effect. Every job impacts a family and other service related jobs. What do we know currently about how deep those are going to be?
I can't speak to how deep they're going to be. Maybe the commissioner can, but we're already beginning to see some of that. You know, when we looked at January to January state government, I think we were down 100 jobs, but by September, we were down by about 1,300 jobs. So we're already seeing that tightening budget have some effect on state jobs, and that could become even more dramatic next year. You know, last year, the big cuts came in the capital budget. Bigger cuts, most people seem to agree, are probably going to come out of the operating budget this next fiscal year. I can't forecast what that's going to be, but there's no doubt that, it's already having an effect on that, and it will continue to.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add, Commissioner?
Yeah, I think, these are, when we talk about budget cuts and we talk about cutting positions, it's easy to think about in the abstract, but these are real people with real jobs and families they have to support. And, when you... excuse me, when you delete their position or when you cut their position, that does have an effect on certainly their family's economy, but multiply that by several people in a community, and you could have a real problem. I know that that's something that as a commissioner I think about every time we are faced with layoffs. We've been fortunate at the department that most of our job cuts, I should say, have come through vacancies and attrition, retirements. But we have had to engage in layoffs, and wherever we could, we tried to see if we could find a dislocated worker job elsewhere. But it's something that really concerns me. I know it concerns the governor. You have to take that seriously when people talk about cutting jobs. Another thing to consider is that even if you fired all public employees, all state employees, That would only account for, I think, $1.5 or $1.7 billion of our $3.5 billion budget.
And you'd also be crashing a big part of the economy
exactly.
by doing those things.
So we do. We have to, when we do have to, what we call right-size our economy, given the climate that we're in right now. But you have to think very, very hard before you make those cuts, because they absolutely have an effect on people's lives.
Let's get one quick call in, one last quick call from Francis in Bethel. Hi, Francis.
Hey, good morning from out here, chilly Bethel. I just wanted to find out the state of affairs of agriculture and its potential in the state. We've been pushing the tribes out this way to embrace the use of their land to grow things. And I'm just wondering if there is a future based on the past of our agricultural efforts and the failed attempts, what the thoughts are as agriculture as a possible remedy.
Thank you, Francis, for that call. And that kind of also I'd like to incorporate into that question about how people may be moving around the state from urban to rural, rural to urban, what we're seeing in that regard. So let's talk about in the last minute or so, the impact of agriculture and what that future might look like as the climate changes also.
Well, I know agriculture is something that the governor is particularly interested in. You know, it's been in the news this last week. But it's something that he really wants to see a growth in our agricultural economy and export of our agricultural products. And when I hear about some of these projects and entrepreneurial projects in rural Alaska around agriculture, I get so excited. I've heard about some of these ventures. It's something that I would like to learn a little bit more about, because if they're, you know, we know in a rural Alaska we have higher unemployment rates. If there's something that we can do about that through you know, sort of a win-win, you know, help that local economy and put a bunch of people to work. I would love to learn a little bit more about that in some of these rural communities, and not just urban as well, but particularly in rural communities.
It's a food security issue,
exactly,
too.
Exactly.
We can grow more within the state. It's jobs, and it's also making sure we've got food if something happens.
And sometimes we forget that, you know, fishing really is sort of agriculture. I mean, And that's what we, you know, that's where our huge advantage is. And it's a huge industry that's thriving.
Well, thank you so much to both of you, Commissioner Heidi Dreiges, for being here, State Economist Neil Fried, for being here. And thank you for listening to us as we talk about what the future might look like for Alaska wages. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Celebrate National Philanthropy Day in Alaska and honor outstanding small businesses like Two Friends Gallery for their work to make Alaska a better place to live and raise Alaskan families. Join the celebration on Friday, November 20th at the Dena'ina Center. Visit afpalaska.net. This message sponsored by Alaska Public Media and AFP Alaska. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.